So my name is Danielle Shenwith, and I work closely with the Independent Media Center for the last, well, since we started in 2000. It actually started with a group of friends, 12 of us in a living room, and we collectivized our media equipment, and we started to help each other produce radio as kind of citizen or amateur journalists. And I also helped to get the applications in for WRFU back when we were trying to get a license. That was in 2000 and 2002. I currently work with a group called the Prometheus Radio Project. Mm-hmm. And that that's a group that helps groups across the United States get licenses to start mostly low-power radio stations like WRFU, which are it's 100 watts or less, the power of a light bulb, essentially. And so I spent a long time working to raise money and then to help to pass legislation that would create hundreds, if not thousands, more radio stations across the U.S. And then I'm currently working on outreach to get the word out to let folks know about this opportunity to start new radio stations.
Oh, so you said about the Prometheus project, radio project. So indeed, is that the project to support it, to set up this WRFU?
Yeah, so Prometheus Radio Project is actually responsible in part for the existence of WRFU because of Petri Dish, who's one of the co-founders of that organization, and they're kind of a group of radio evangelists, we call them. They let us know that there was even an opportunity to apply for a new license. A number of us had worked with WEFT, which is the other community radio station in town, and you know, we found that there wasn't enough room on the dial for everyone who wanted to have a show, and especially kind of eclectic and shows that don't quite fit with jazz and blues and world beat and some of the things that they emphasize, especially during the day. And so we thought that there was a need for additional community radio. And so when Prometheus came to town in a broken down car to let us know that this opportunity was coming, we started to organize to apply, and they really helped us. It's very difficult process with the federal agency, the FCC, to apply. Not difficult, but just bureaucratic. And so they helped us navigate the bureaucracy so that it was actually quite easy for us to apply. Then really helped us to get on air. And so we had a barn raising. There's some photos here in the studio of us actually raising the tower on top of this building with our own hands. Mm-hmm. And all of the things that you see inside the studio, like these CD the bookshelves for the CDs were actually made by kids, and there are pictures of the kids over there screwing together the different pieces. And this was all, the wires were actually all soldered by hand, and there's pictures of us actually soldering the wires. And so Prometheus helped to teach us how we solder our own wires and how we build our own station and how we put our own tower on the roof. So that they kind of helped us to raise the roof on the station and launch it.
It's exciting. And also, I heard about the tower, the last meeting of WRFU, the new tower is coming soon. Mm-hmm. Could you explain about that? That's also very exciting, good news.
Sometimes, you know, when you don't have a lot of money, but you have a lot of people, I feel like the growth is slow but steady. So RFU is kind of an example of what, when you have people power to do things, you develop over time. And so it's kind of like a flower that, you know, kind of grows up and opens its face to the sun. And I feel like that's what RFU has been doing, is kind of the slow growth towards the sun. We put a temporary tower on the roof when we first launched the radio station in 2005. And that tower goes to 65 feet.
65
which
feet.
Is mm-hmm. not the full height that we can broadcast. So the federal government allows us to broadcast at 100 feet. Oh, and at 100 feet, we can reach the entire community. Mm-hmm. But at 65 feet, there are parts of the community where we can't be heard because there are other towers and buildings blocking the signal. Mm-hmm. And so our goal was to, you know, was to put the tower up at the full height, and we had to raise the funds to do that. Many folks, I was not involved with the fundraising, but I warmly congratulate and celebrate all the people who were involved in that fundraising, raised about $17,000 for that new tower. And so this fall, we, in fact, I was just talking to the folks who are building the tower today, and they're in the process of building it to specifications based on the kind of soil that we have here. And it will be shipped here in October, and we'll be putting it up during the month of November.
Uh-huh. So November, so more people can listen.
Yes, yeah, so more people will be able to listen in November. And for anyone who's listening, we will have two volunteer days in November, where if folks are interested in what is a radio tower and how do you put it up yourself and how do you connect it to a radio station, it's going to be really exciting. We'll have a big crane here and big tower, and it's like a big Lego piece. You know, it's like a Lego set. You kind of put the pieces of Legos on top of each other. Mm. So so we'll be raising the tower in November, and folks can help out if they would like.
So residents in the Champaign also can listen to WRFU?
Yeah, sure. Currently parts of Champaign, RFU is heard in parts of Champaign and Urbana, but once we raise the tower to its full height of 100 feet, it should be the case that the entire community within the kind of city boundaries will be able to hear us. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, especially because we're flat. We have the benefit of it being flat land around here, which makes it a little bit easier for the signal to go far.
WRFU, you said the first. Already there is another other community radio, community radio station here in the Champaign, I think. So WRFU, what is there is a similarity or difficult difference from other community radio?
Yeah, so it's there's an interesting history of community radio in the U.S., and maybe I could sketch that out because I think it's not just about our community, but what community radio has looked like. So in the United States, when radio was first born, just like the internet, there was that feeling of openness that, you know, it's open frontier and there's a lot that you can do with this new technology and this new communications tool. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the government very quickly gave away most of the spectrum to corporations. Mm-hmm. And there really, there were some radio enthusiasts and some hobbyists who had little tiny radio stations. And there were a few, there were some educational stations in schools. But generally speaking, there wasn't community radio. The first community radio station in the U.S. really was the Pacifica Network, and it came out of the anti-war movement after World War II, one in World War II, this kind of sense that there needed to be an alternative voice to the hawkishness and the warmongering of what we saw in our culture in the United States. And so Pacifica Network News really was the first listener-supported radio, where there weren't advertisements, but listeners who tuned in would donate to the station to keep it afloat. And so that was a big precedent. And what we saw coming out of the activism of the 60s and early 70s was another push for community radio. And so a lot of folks saw how important media was with the civil rights movement and the anti-Vietnam War movements. And so they really pushed for there being more access to the airwaves. And there was a series of licenses given out in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And many of the what we call full power, the larger community radio stations, went on air at that time. So WEFT in Champaign became a station in the 80s. WORT in Madison, which is a wonderful station to the north, came online. And hundreds of stations across the U.S., in different communities, many of whom came to the Grassroots Radio Conference a few weeks ago. So those are kind of came out of the 60s counterculture. Then there was black college radio and ethnic radio stations that really came out of the 70s, 80s, and 90s and were kind of a separate movement. And then there was the first low-power FM radio licensing, and that WRFU represents that kind of next phase of radio. And then this upcoming window next year that the FCC will open will be kind of the last spectrum available in the U.S. will be given away at that time. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what it looks like. And I think the difference between the a place like WEFT and the full power stations and WRFU and some of the low power stations is that this is more of like a niche. You'll see on low power FM stations, you'll see a lot of non-English language programming, mm-hmm. Small communities that don't have access to communications will use low power. It tends to be very eclectic and kind of interesting, strange mix up of lots of different kinds of things. Whereas some of the larger stations have really gone to a more standard format for mm-hmm. those. So that's some of the history and some of the differences. Mm-hmm.
And I would just add that I think part of the difference is economics, mm-hmm. because it costs 10 times the amount of money to run a full power station as it does a low power station. So full power stations are under, they have to speak to a broader audience to survive. And so oftentimes that means not having as much eclectic or specialty language programming, et cetera. Whereas a low power station like RFU can really speak to a lot of smaller audiences because it costs so little for us to stay afloat. And I think it's really important that these little neighborhood radio stations exist to serve mm-hmm. that function.
So now is more younger people, they don't listen to radio so much, they use the internet. So we have a Harukana show, but I felt some difficulty how we can get audience. How do you think that now is the radio is not outdated? Mm-hmm. Do you think?
Yeah, so I think that a couple of things. They used to say that when television came, radio was dead, mm-hmm. and that's not true. And when they said the internet came, the television was dead, also not true. But it is the case that each new media changes the mm-hmm. old ones. Mm-hmm. So I think the exciting thing about radio is that it is extremely accessible, mm-hmm. and it goes across borders, through walls, and people who are in their cars and working can listen to it. And it is inherently local. And so when you hear somebody broadcasting on the radio, a community radio station, you know that that person is someone who lives in your community down the street from you. And so people come together like we do here. There's four of us in the studio collectively having a conversation, which is really different than the internet, where people don't necessarily have to come together to curate a space. There's more of, it's more like everyone's got their own channel. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the power of bringing together broadcast, which is accessible, very local, relevant, and bringing news and events that are relevant to people's community, connected with the internet via broadcast or live stream or whatever it may be, to be able to connect global audiences and share content and archive and hear back from audiences is a really powerful connection. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the future of radio is that you broadcast to your community
issues that are of relevance to your community. No other radio station does that except community radio. All the corporate radio stations, they don't speak to the community anymore. It's all commercial music. So there's a very unique role there. And at the same time, there's this connection, this global connection, like you're doing with the show, that, you know, this is really kind of a an example or exemplary show of what can happen when you cross boundaries, national boundaries, et cetera, and you use technology to connect people. You're able to translate and do multilingual programming. And I feel like the result of that could be that we develop a consciousness of ourselves as living in community, in connection with other communities, not mediated by corporate interests. Because right now, the government keeps us from moving across borders, and corporations to control the messages. And community media, radio, internet, video, etc., is an opportunity for us to really speak directly to one another, not mediated through those corporate interests or having to respect those national boundaries. The offering of community radio is not radio, it's community. That's the unique offering. We lack community information, and so community radio offers that. And so I think sometimes people focus on the technology when actually the offering is that there isn't venues locally for people to, ordinary folks like ourselves, to get on the air and express ourselves and share information, news and events, etc. So, you know, at the Independent Media Center, we integrate all the media. We use everything at our disposal, and the next tool that comes, that is born, we'll use that tool as well to get for community members to be able to communicate with each other and organize for to make change in their communities. And if we don't have that aspect, then I don't really know how we can have democracy, because I feel like that's the kind of fertilizer for any kind of democratic city, is to have the ability to communicate with each other and discuss things.
And also in the U.S., the community radio is now expanding. It means a new act, Local Community Radio Act, is working. So could you explain about the Local Community Radio Act and what this act will make for the future?
Yeah, so the Local Community Radio Act came out of an intense frustration that many people had that corporations had taken over pretty much in almost all of the airwaves, and that there was little space for communities to speak. And so we knew that with these large stations, there were little pockets in between the big stations where you could still locate new radio stations. And so activists urged the Federal Communications Commission to make a new service called the Low Power Service that would allow local, non-commercial, community-based groups to have a voice on the air. That service, after a lot of pressure, mostly by radio pirates who were broadcasting unlicensed stations, that service was created in 2000. Unfortunately, the corporate vultures were circling, and they came and put pressure on Congress and convinced Congress to limit low-power FM, low-power radio, in all areas but rural areas. So Urbana is about the biggest space that they're, you know, the biggest community that got a low power station in that first round. Anything bigger than Champaign-Urbana was completely cut out of having these low power stations. So the Local Community Radio Act was a response to that, to get the Congress to overturn its decision in 2000 to limit low power radio to rural areas. And activists fought for 10 years to pass that bill. And in 2011, Obama signed it into law after it passed Congress. And I was working with Prometheus at the time, and we kind of shepherded that law through at the very end of the year. And so what that means is huge. We're facing the biggest expansion of community radio in U.S. history, with over doubling the numbers of community radio stations, including in urban areas for the first time. Mm-hmm. So Atlanta, St. Louis, Indianapolis, you know, Miami, places like this are going to have space for community radio for the in some ways for the first time. And that licensing window is coming next year. And it'll be a one time chance to get those licenses. It'll be very competitive. There'll be thousands of groups applying. And we're hoping to that we can help community groups that are truly representative of their local communities to apply and win those licenses.
So did you discuss about the issue in the grassroots radio conference?
Yes, we did. And we were working with folks who are interested in starting stations, teaching them how they could go about applying for a license and getting on air.
It is time for so thank you very much for coming to Harukana Show.
Well, for those listening in Japan, I'd like to invite everyone to come visit us sometime here in Urbana, Illinois at WRFU. We would love to have you and love to make global connections across borders and boundaries because we have a lot in common.